Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting fact-filled podcast episode from the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
And today we have a ton of subjects to cover in reference to Prince Edward Island real estate, which these topics would pretty well cover real estate anywhere in North America. So let's get started. Boy, we've had at least one or two sales where this happened. As people are becoming more and more familiar with technology and technology becomes easier and easier to implement, we're finding a lot more camera and microphone systems and properties. Are you finding that?
That's exactly what I find. Technology has found Prince Edward Island, and I do try my best to inform my buyer clients of this.
So there's a couple of things you want to pay attention to when it comes to camera systems and microphones on two different ends. One end is a lot of companies like ADT, Bell, private businesses that offer security services are now leasing and or renting these cameras because some of them can get quite expensive. I've heard of some systems, you know, for a house cost $10,000, $15,000 if you're into a 12 or 14 camera system. You've probably seen that before.
I have.
And they're using software like Blue Iris, which is pretty cool. Regardless of that, sorry my tech geek got out, these systems may have liens against the property, and they should also be disclosed. So what's happened in the past sometimes is we see the cameras because they're new to the agents on the island, which is assumed they're paid for, and then you find out from the owner of the property a day before closing, oh, by the way, those cameras don't belong to us, and the security camera company has to remove them. Usually the owner of the property tells us the morning of the closing. Have you found this?
We've experienced this for sure. And cameras aren't as visible. It's not the way many years ago where they would be this big box in a corner. Some of them are not so visible and easy to spot and see.
No, some of them can be down to like a millimeter hole in a piece of drywall.
Yeah. And the concern with that is as much as a seller, you assume, well, I'm leasing this equipment, so I don't own it. And I am under the assumption that they're just going to be removed when the security company that has installed them comes and removes them. Please know they are hardwired in, which, Michael, is that not considered a fixture?
I'm just looking at our Schedule A, paragraph 7 here, and it says the shadows and the fixtures being transferred, part of this agreement, to the property of the seller, and the seller agrees to convey all shadows and fixtures. I don't know if I read that properly, but it basically means anything that's bolted in comes with the property. So if you do have security cameras that have a lien, rented, or lease, that needs to be disclosed when you list the property, not when you go to close it. And it should be all in all purchase and sale agreements. Now, in reference to showings, when you're showing a property and it has a bunch of cameras and probably microphones as well, do you go in and try to talk about the property as much as possible?
That is definitely a point of education that I spend. And if there is any of my buyer clients listening, they'll be able to, you know, confirm that this is a conversation that we have. I don't advise my clients to say anything overly negative, and I don't advise them to say anything overly positive. And that's because I don't want, if they say how much they love the property, I just gave away their leverage. And if they complain too much about the negative features, thinking they're going to use that to get the price down and justify if they're going to put in a lowball price, you just ticked off the seller and they're going to end up negotiating a little tighter with you.
What I usually do is I'd advise all my clients to bring a giant ghetto blaster with it and play either AC/DC, Ozzy Osbourne, or Judas Priest music at maximum volume so no one can hear what's going on, including us. Plus, it makes the showing more enjoyable.
I have never come across someone that does that, Michael. I need to book a showing with you.
You've met them. So these contracts have to be precise. And the less precise they are, the more problems you're going to run into. And every time there's a problem, for instance, security cameras, you're going to have a buyer that wants an adjustment in the form of money. If your property is left in disgusting order and it's dirty and there's garbage all over the place, the buyer's going to want an adjustment. They're going to want a discount on the property. So make sure these things are taken care of. Just the other day, because I really have no hobbies, I read purchase and sale agreements for entertainment. I saw in one contract, the first time ever, coming from one of the brokerages that claim they're going to take over the world inside of 36 months, they wrote in there, buyer wants. And then they listed two or three different appliances. I thought that was kind of funny. I being nitpicky when it comes to contracts, because you get into problems if you're not, I looked up the definition, and want means have a desire to possess or do something, wish for. So they're wishing for and they had to desire. I probably would have written that, said the purchase price includes the dishwasher, microwave, washer, dryer, whatever they were indicating. What would you do? Would you use the word want?
No, I would make
it. Hoped for. But hope for. I hope for the microwave.
No, I would make an absolute statement, not something that conveys, again, my client wishes to have the following items. That is not clear.
Sounds wishy-washy.
It does sound wishy-washy. No, absolute statements. It needs to be black and white. And when you are, if you're a buyer or a seller, read your clauses that your agents put together for you. And read it not just from your own interpretation, because this is what I do, and I'm sure you probably do the same, Michael. I will reread them. We do have 5 elements to a good clause. Without getting into that, I will reread it as if I am the person writing or inserting it, right? Reading it as if I am my lawyer, reading it as if I am the other party's lawyer. Is there any way someone could interpret the wording to benefit them?
Getting into it quickly, because we have a lot to cover, what are the 5 elements of a properly written clause? Time delineation.
What is to be done? Who is to do it? Who is to pay for it? The time that it is to be completed in, and what happens if it is not completed? Those
right.
are the 5.
That's a subject in itself, which
yes,
we'll move on. If you're not already aware, the provincial government has a number of newsletters they offer, and you can find them at gov.pe.ca that will tell you absolutely everything that's happening in the island, right down to every bridge that's being replaced and road that's under construction and tie-ups in traffic, hospitals that have experienced COVID, seniors' homes that have had problems. It's all in there. But one of the most interesting newsletters I like is actually focused on tourists. And that's available at PEI Play. I mentioned this to Patty this morning, and she mentioned I never told her about it.
I hadn't heard of the URL peiplay.com before.
So click on that. It brings you to a whole pile of stuff geared towards tourists, but it's also handy if you live on the island because it keeps you in the loop as to what's going on. But they send out a newsletter typically every month. And peiplay.com is the URL, which usually just forwards you to another site, but you'll get there one way or the other.
Yeah. No, it was quite informative. So thank you, Michael, for sharing that today.
Have you been doing any CMAs, comprehensive market analysis, which are similar to an appraisal, but this is what the agents do as far as cottages recently, and found the values are still all willy-nilly all over the place?
They are all over the place. It is so hard to evaluate a property or to properly inform and educate a seller based on some property down the street or in a you know, community close by sold for X amount of dollars. So therefore, they feel theirs worth $750,000. Your CMA comes in at best 5. It's really, really hard, I find, to do our job today.
I did a CMA at a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom cottage that was about 25 years old in the center of the island. And the values I came back with when it came back to comparable sales the last year or two, because that's how far we have to go back in PEI sometimes because we just do not have the numbers, is between $189,000 and $350,000. So what would you do in that case? Or do you want me to tell you what I would do real quick?
Go right ahead.
First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of the motivated sellers, which are going to be at the bottom. Bankruptcies, foreclosures, divorces, people that just want out. So they're gone, off the table. And then I go to the highest one or two. In this case, there's one for $350,000, which didn't make any sense at all. Obviously, it's somebody buying on emotion. This happens a lot with recreational and cottage properties in particular. So maybe they had a friend that lived next door or a buddy that lived in that subdivision, or they just fell in love with that area. That happens. You have clients that will pay basically anything to be in a certain location, I'm sure.
100%.
So I got rid of that guy. We came out, after we removed the top and the bottom, we came out with an average of $221,000.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the next step, just so our listeners know, is to compare that $221,000 one to the actual subject property to determine, is that a similar product? Is it inferior or superior? And from there, you navigate your way to establishing price.
Oh, that's what one we method. Did. Yeah, because we got above 221. We got into cottages that were a lot nicer because this one was, let's say, prehistoric.
Okay.
What do agents call it? Rustic?
Yes, there. I know what you're saying.
A piece of history. Yes, grandma's pink shag history.
Lots of character. Some you will see experience the generations because there is the 50s in it. There's some 60s updates, some 70s updates, some 80s updates, some 90s. So if some of these are pretty fun to go through and see if you can pinpoint what decade, which room was done.
Let me ask you something. When you look at a new property that you've listed or have potential to list, on a scale of 1 to 10, being in the business for what? How long you been in? 6 years?
15.
How excited are you on that scale?
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm very enthusiastic. Oh, I'm to give you a scale. I would say 10. When I first walk in, I'm very excited.
Well, that's good. Not as excited as me because I would have an 11. Regardless of this, okay. I think it's really important when you do hire an agent that they are excited about the listing. They do have a certain enthusiasm to take on listings because a lot of agents do not want to deal with listings. And if they show that in their body language and their tonality and the words that they're using, maybe that agent should be probably dealing with buyers if they find that more enjoyable, or maybe not be in real estate at all. But I think you have to have a level of enthusiasm because when you have potential buyers calling you, that tonality, those words you use, that enthusiasm that you have as a listing agent should shine bright in order to get that agent or that vendor's property sold in less time for more money. Would you agree or strongly agree?
I strongly agree. I would say if you do have an agent that goes in, and again, this is anywhere across Canada, and they focus on the negative elements of your home to justify why they're going to come in at the price that they are as a proposed list price, may not be somebody that you want to sign and enter into a contractual agreement with, because that's what you're doing when you sign up with a listing brokerage. You want an agent who is going to be honest, which I'm sure, Michael, you are, but also see all the highlights and the features and the benefits and be able to convey that to a prospective buyer, but be realistic. So there should be a nice balance, but with a little bit of an emphasis on dealing with objections. And with every objection, they've got some kind of response or counter to it to show the upside.
Absolutely. So on to other newsletters, and we're probably going to touch on that subject we discovered later on if we have time to. Realtor.ca, which was put up by the Canadian Real Estate Association, which also has a newsletter which covers all of Canadian real estate, informed us that they are now running a pilot mortgage qualification program. So it basically means now when you look at a listing, you can click on apply for mortgage or pre-qualify, I think is the terminology they used. And then it brings you two links for mortgage brokers. In this case, that was Scotiabank, TD, and someone I had never heard of. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the more consumers can go to realtor.ca and have all their needs met, the better for the consumer's experience.
Do you think they should go beyond what realtor.ca is suggesting in the form of mortgage brokers, banks that the buyer's agent recommends?
Yes.
Credit unions?
Yeah, I would say they need to go to multiple sources. But if you're just getting started, I think it's an excellent tool and resource to get the process going if you're thinking about buying and selling. And the other thing, just to give a little pump for the realtor.ca site, there's a bunch of little tabs that you can click on. There is one called, I believe it's called the Living Room Blog. And it has some really great content and information and advice and market reviews. So realtor.ca, I'm pretty proud of what CREA has created because there is a lot of valuable information and resources available. This is just one extra element, which is awesome.
But they're talking about separating it from the financials of the Canadian Real Estate Association as an asset in order to turn it into a profit center. And I think this mortgage qualification business is probably part of that, because I would suspect that if any mortgages come together, Korea is probably going to get a kickback.
Yes, I could see that.
And agents do get kickbacks for recommending banks sometimes, but they legally have to tell you that if they're recommending ABC Bank, that ABC Bank is giving them a kickback or a referral fee, which usually is in the order of, well, depending on where you go, it could be 0.5%.
Yes, no, absolutely. It is right in our code of ethics and that we have to disclose if we do receive any monetary kickbacks as a result of...
Well, it doesn't necessarily be monetary. It could be a gift certificate, could be a week in their cottage.
Yes, I guess.
I've never heard of someone getting a week at
their cottage. Drive their Corvette for a week.
What kind of people do you work with?
I just sold a property, and in the midst of selling it, we have conditions to fulfill. And next thing I know, the owner's got friends going over there, removing stuff from the cottage, asking them if they want anything. And at this point, I had to remind this property owner that, hey, we have a contract on the table. And the contract says that everything in that property, with the exception of what we've listed on the purchase and sale, goes with it. I had to give him a little bit of a refresher. Have you had that happen before? The point to this is read your contract and follow it. Otherwise, you're going to have potential problems at closing day.
Yeah, once a contract is signed, that becomes basically the law of the agreement. You cannot, especially once you remove all your conditions and now you're locked into this contractual agreement, start making up changes and I'd like to see this, or you know, the final walkthrough day, you're doing another home inspection and you want to ask for extra items, you don't like this, you don't like that, why wasn't it professionally cleaned? I've seen just about everything. If it's not in the contract, the seller is not responsible for having to do that, and it's not a time to enter into a renegotiation.
And stop all your whining and complaining.
Yes, refer back to your contract. You signed it.
You signed the contract. We don't want to hear the drama. Years ago, I had a client that was buying a property that had a Rolls Royce to sell in the UK. He had some land to sell in Nova Scotia, house to sell in Ontario, and the list went on and on. It was a big, huge story. What do you think that turned into?
Probably nothing.
It turned into a giant file of amendments, stories, and drama. The moral of this story is, if you have a purchaser that has a big story, which usually is because of a lack of funds to buy the property or no financing, it's usually going to turn into nothing but a story at the end of the day. Because qualified buyers don't usually enter into a contract with a story. Would you agree?
Typically, a pretty clean, straightforward, yes, there's going to be some things that come up and you learn and discover through the process. And it's funny, Michael, I just said this to my 17-year-old son, that just with regards to dating and that, if it starts off with a story or if it's difficult at the beginning, it's not going to get any easier. So I told him, I said, be mindful of the people you choose to date, because if they stress you out in the beginning, the stress level is just going to go up. And it's no different than dealing with real estate. If there's a story, if there's all this drama, you're not going to all of a sudden corral this person into being, you know, smooth and a positive real estate buying or selling experience. It's going to end on that same note.
Oh, absolutely. And the whole process is going to be arduous if you're dealing with the purchaser or a vendor that's problematic. It's best just to stay away from those situations because life is too short. 48-hour offers. So essentially, people will offer on a house in PEI or wherever it is, but they'll make it subject to their house selling somewhere else. Typically in our market, it's usually Ontario or Quebec or wherever. And if another offer comes in the meantime, they have 48 hours typically, could be 49 or 72 or whatever, to remove that condition. The challenge with having a offer on your property that's subject to another house selling would be what? what are our concerns with that other property that they're selling?
Okay, so to just back up.
It should be on MLS and it should be sellable.
Well, 100%. And on MLS is key, not somebody that has it posted on their Facebook or, you know.
For sale by owner.
GG,
I know in Quebec, they're big into these for sale by owner systems that are not as effective as MLS.
If you're going to accept a 48-hour, and Michael and I have a little bit of a difference of opinions on this, which is kind of good for our listeners, but if you're going to accept a 48-hour, you should make sure that that buyer's property is either already on the market or it is about to go on the market within the next day or two of entering into a contractual agreement.
Would you talk to the listing agent in that other province or state and see if it's a sellable property?
Most times I do.
Most times I do too.
Really
sold my idea.
No.
Concerns about electric heating systems. When people are buying a property and has all electric heat, either it may, you know, it may be in the form of radiators, on demand, whatever the case may be, that has no propane, oil, we don't have natural gas in Ontario that's in PEI that's piped like Ontario and other provinces. What should the sellers do to make that property more attractive? You share the bills, right?
Okay. You're saying with regards to a buyer off-island concern, what the cost, because it is
Any buyer that looks at a property that has electric heat is going to have a concern over the bills, because all they can see in their head is, oh, my bill's going to be $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a month. What can we do to advocate for the seller so it's not the end of the world as far as the buyer's concerned?
Yes, to have some sort of spreadsheet or disclosure, here are what my bills are. The other thing is that's also education. I mean, because it's really hard to determine what part of this is the heat unless you're going to compare the summer bills. And again, if you have AC and in the summer months and then heat in the winter months, probably your September, May, June would be the months that you'd want to pull on as a comparison to determine what that actual heat is. But I do know buyers get very concerned with electric heat and the added cost that they're looking at. But if they disclose a spreadsheet, here's what my fees are. What you pay for electricity, Michael, would be very different than what someone else might. You've got all your gizmos and gadgets. You've got, maybe you like your house warmer than the average person. There's so many variables. It cannot be an absolute either.
So if someone's selling their house, should they disconnect all their light bulbs, set their heat for 1 degree Celsius and never use the air conditioner a year before they go to sell their home?
That could be a tactic to make your
property
look more desirable. But if you do have electric heat and say you have an elderly individual living in the home, you got to do your due diligence and look into who lives inside the home. You know, do they like things ran a little warm? I had an agent in my office this week that told me there's a tenant in this place who keeps their house, their unit, so cold. They will not turn the heat up past 16 degrees Celsius in the winter months because obviously they must be paying for their electricity. And that's just how they live. Anyone else would go, oh, okay, this place is great to heat. It's very cheap, only to find out these people were living with sweaters and basically winter boots inside your house to keep your toes from freezing.
I was in a house that the homeowner was there and he was showing it to a bunch of agents when we had these, what do they call them, the caravans, when the agents would go through new listings. And he says to the agents, and it's the middle of winter, this house only costs X to heat. And as he's talking, icicles are dripping from his mouth and I can see his breath. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, that has a tendency to happen when you turn your heat off. Because it was an ice box in there, which is why I mentioned that before. Farmers Field and Drone Mania. Isn't it wonderful how you have these listing photos and you have nothing but farmer fields around it? And then the owner thinks, why hasn't my house sold? Yet 9 photos out of the 30 to 50 are pictures of farmer's fields. So they're thinking, spray.
Overspray.
What is it? Watertown? Walkerton.
Walkerton, yes.
Water contamination. don't emphasize farmers' fields in your photos if you can. It's not a selling feature.
And they not to misrepresent, there are so many really good apps and tools out there, and people really should come and look at the properties anyways. Big companies do not show everything with regards to their product. They show the best photos to show the property in its best light, and that's what marketing and advertising is. It is up to the consumer to do their due diligence on whether it's taste testing or using the products or looking for reviews or experiencing it themselves. It's no different than that in real estate.
Have you had buyers that you've worked with that said, and they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, that they're looking for their forever home, and that would be defined as someone that's going to buy a house and die in it, opposed to someone that doesn't say that? I don't know if I said that properly.
I know, I'm just...
What would your advice be for someone that says we're looking for a forever home? Should they only be concerned with what they're looking for their own needs, or should they consider that it may not be their forever home?
You just did exactly what I would be doing, is asking questions. Help me understand what your needs are, what you assume or are predicting the next 10, 20 years are going to look like in your life, because circumstances change, life events happen, we move, we upsize, downsize, we move, work, relocation. It's all about what your first entry into this dialogue was, Michael, is you need to start by asking some questions, kind of educate them a little bit as you go through the process. If you push too hard, and I don't know what your experience is, Michael, I find there'll be some pushback. So you have to be sensitive with this, because they've obviously made their mind up, and they've bought into this idea, this is my forever home. So we just need to slowly educate, depending on the person. Some you can push a little bit quicker, and others you have to walk through the process. But help them understand every forever home needs an exit strategy. Would you not agree?
Professional real estate people don't look so much at the entrance strategy, because it's very easy to buy anything if you have the money or the financing to do so. They look at the exit strategy. So the exit strategy, whether you're building a custom home or buying a home that's on the market, the used home, should be, is this home going to be easy to sell down the road if circumstances change? Because I know from my experience, probably 8 out of 10 people that have bought their forever homes end up wanting to upgrade, downgrade, move, lost their job, got a divorce, whatever. Life changed. Kids have moved away, so now they're changing provinces or states.
Yeah, lots of things can happen that change a person's reality and circumstances. And a good agent will gently advise you of that and help make sure that you're at the very least aware of an exit strategy, because I don't want to be that listing agent that they call back in 3 years' time, and whether this property was on the market for a day and they just happened to see it and they put in an offer, that does not indicate when you go to sell it, it's only going to take a day. That particular product could end up taking a very niche buyer, so it's available or appeals to only a niche market, and it could take you 3 to 5 years, is what used to be the norm on a lot of properties on PEI to sell.
It can take a long time to sell property here, especially if it's overpriced and it's an oddity or something that doesn't appeal to the average buyers. That's why I always say, if you're going to build a house, use a plan, something that's proven, something that's sellable, something that down the road you can walk away without having to leave it on the market for 10 years because you built something so different. Now, originally, when videos were done, in the old days, the agent would do the video. And then came along the artistic video. So the difference between the two is, originally we'd walk through the property, we'd show you the property, we'd tell you the positives about the property, show you the views, maybe the waterfront, the beach, inside the garage, the basement, tell you all the kinds of stuff that you wouldn't normally know walking through the property. But it's a lot easier for agents today just to pick up the phone, email, or text a videographer, and they shoot their little quick 2 or 3 minute video, throw some music behind it. There's no vocals at all. There's no text really, other than saying, this is the master bedroom, this is the lower level. Which videos do you feel are far more conducive to selling a property and a shorter period of time. The agent doing it themselves, assuming they know what they're doing, and their big fat head isn't in frame 90% of the time, and it's under probably 3 to 4 minutes. Hopefully three, but it depends on the size of the property. Or doing the artistic video.
So an artistic video, being in your video yourself, has far...
You're not in the artistic video. It's just the house.
I realize that. So what are you calling an artistic video?
The videographer goes out there, he shoots the house. You're at lunch with your friends, drinking beer.
They look good.
You're drinking beer at lunch.
I realize they are good in the sense that it's got some elevator-like music to it, kind of guides you through. I find those videos don't have as long of a watch time on them. If you want someone to watch the entire video to really fully experience your property, I would say the candid ones with the agent walking you through, again, keeping it tight. That's not easy to do. We've done hundreds of videos, I know, Michael, and you probably thousands. There's a lot of work involved in doing them yourself. You have to make sure, yes, you are not the focal point and the person's house is the focal point of the video. However, you are as if you're showing it, guiding the consumer, guiding the buyer through the home so they get a real life actual viewing of it and hopefully point out some features that may not be visible by just an artistic video, which just kind of sweeps you through the home. You get to graze through each room. Yeah, the other ones, plus it also gives you opportunity because you do mess up. And my bloopers are all a result of all my mess ups trying to shoot some of these videos that I've done in the past.
So if you're getting your house listed and there is a promise to get a video done, it would be interesting if you feel it would be conducive for a quicker sale, which it should be. Get the agent to do the video themselves. And the comment about the big fat head didn't come from me. It came from another agent that was watching a video that someone had produced. It was like an hour and a half long. I think they spent 40 minutes just in the kitchen. You couldn't see the house because the agent was always in the frame. So it was more like an agent promotion video than it was a video promoting the house. They don't want to see you. They want to see the house. They want to do it quickly.
If I can, Michael, if you go to Michael's YouTube channel and go back to like 2006 or 7 when he first started doing videos, I think you actually have a video where you spent about 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes.
The whole video was 9 minutes long.
In the kitchen. So if you want to see Michael when he was first learning and figuring out video, there's some funny stuff on his early years on his YouTube channel.
Getting to what we talked about originally with liens on houses in reference to cameras. Well, the other thing we're seeing that's getting problematic is heat pumps, because Finance PEI, or the provincial government through Finance PEI, which is the same thing, ended up giving people, was it interest-free loans to put heat pumps in their system?
Correct.
Probably because their cousin runs the HVAC shop down the road?
I don't know that, but...
So what should we look for when we're either listing or representing buyer's agents?
So the first thing is, as a seller, either you disclose that you do have a lien. If you forgot because it's been a year and you're just caught up in the moment of an agent's coming in and it's all exciting and you're going to show them all the features and see what the price is, that because that's what most sellers are concerned with, easy to forget things. A good listing agent, however, before they go out to your property and meet with you and view the property, they should be looking at the full history of your property, pulling your registry report, knowing what you paid for it when you purchased it. Most cases, the consideration value is available on the registry. In some cases, it's not. So in their defense, if they don't have it, might not be available, but they should have at least looked for it. On the registry, it'll also let us know if there is any liens or anything. So the listing agent, if you are looking to be a listing agent, you should have all that information because it helps you ask better questions and be able to do your due diligence yourself and say, what is this about? What's the situation? You know, when is this going to get paid off? Do you know what the implications are. Is there a penalty to paying it out sooner? Is this transferable? There's so many great questions that a listing agent can ask the seller when they notice these. But if you don't do your due diligence and don't realize it exists, well, guess what? It gets missed.
In the case of the heat pumps, from what I understand from my research, is the lawyer will drop probably a simple piece of paper. The finance PEI will sign off on. They indicated to me it would take a day or two. You pay your balance of that loan off, and then it's free and clear, and that lien is removed from the property. But something to consider, because as you discovered there a few days ago, we had another incident where someone sold a house that bought a house that someone sold that bought a house that someone sold that bought a house in PEI. And the chain of dominoes, big surprise, didn't work out, and their new home was a hotel.
Yes. Well, I'm just going to back up. The lien on the property, it should be paid by the proceeds from the sale of the property. It's not something
more prior there, too.
If they have the funds and means to do so. But with regards to what you were just saying, yes, that this particular family, unfortunately, was living in their RV in December. And because there is a dominoes effect, something held up closing. And it could have been
one of these leads.
And it could have been something like this that they needed a day or two in order to provide clear title for the funds for the lawyer, the following the mortgage instructions, to be allowed to release the funds in order for all the rest of the properties to close in the dominoes effect.
That's why it's always nice in the ideal world just to do bridge financing if you don't have the cash to get into the other house with a weak movement in the middle rather than trying to close four or five different houses in a row in the form of dominoes and expecting to get that to go smoothly, which it usually doesn't. And in this case, their closing date was the Thursday, which turns into a Friday, which turns into a weekend.
Yep.
And then they start over all again on the Monday. Now, how is the market? Driving around, do you find you see a lot more for sale signs, new price signs, which means overpriced to begin with, as we've covered in previous podcasts, and arrows are everywhere. Real estate agents love arrows. Some of them are, 10 miles from the property? But eventually you will get to it. And the other thing I noticed on the MLS from our hot sheets, which gives us an up-to-date system that tells us what has been increased, reduced, new, sold, canceled, withdrawn listings, is a lot of new price or price reduced listings, particularly on new houses.
There are price reductions. That list is exactly what you had said it is. I do find there are fewer properties coming onto the market right now. And that is a function of, because I just spoke with one of these sellers this week who had spoken to another agent, and they're being told, don't bring your property on the market right now. Nobody's looking. Wait till the spring. The signs that are out on the properties are staying longer. Agents are going to have to start painting some of these and replacing. If they've got their face on, it's going to start fading away because they're overpriced. And when they went onto the market, or like we had discussed, they purchased such a niche market kind of product. And as a result, because of the way the market is going, they're going to have to take a lesser price on it. We're back to our normal market on PEI, which is weird. It's chaotic. It's up and down. There's lots of information I can say about the winter market.
But it's bad advice telling them to wait the spring to
list. Oh, 100%.
As we've covered, because they can probably end up with more money for their property off season than on season, because everyone's going to list in the spring and now you have more competition. I'm going to let you wrap up another chaotic episode of this podcast that's completely unedited and unscripted.
Just want to thank everyone for listening. And again, if you have any questions, if there's anything that you would like to see us covered or featured on our podcast, a future episode, please feel free to reach out. If you feel you have a product or service that would be of value to people on Prince Edward Island or even real estate in general, also please feel free to share those with us and we'll do a little shout out for them. In the meantime, it is December. It's getting close to the holiday season. Everyone have a safe and wonderful holiday. Enjoy family and friends, and we appreciate every single one of you and are very grateful to our listeners.
As long as you subscribe to our podcast.
There's no conditions.
Have a great day. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.